Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 3 of the Take the L podcast. I'm your host, Liam. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsors right off the bat, but of course, we'll get back into that later. Our guest today is a Forbes 30 Under 30 scholar, the current or previous student body president?
Both.
The current and previous student body president at Stanford University, and my, I guess, first childhood friend, David.
Hello, thank you for having me on.
How have you been doing?
I've been doing well. I think given you know the world right now, definitely been feeling grateful, feeling just lucky to be where I am and to be doing what I'm doing.
I think that something that's interesting, something that I'm like now, just now, like as of this year, I'm now like not in touch with is like college campus response to COVID, because I think it's a fascinating thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Different campuses definitely handled it very differently from the start, like in March, and then throughout the summer, and then now as different schools have been preparing for students' return to campus through the beginning of the school year, and then now as we are approaching our winter semester, it's really interesting to see the processes that different schools are going through and like the decisions that they're making.
So for those of you guys who don't know, I was a student at Cal Maritime, just graduated this past year. And so I felt the effects of like the early stuff, like the stuff that happened back in March. I don't remember the day that I went back to campus, but I remember, I think we were like one of the last California state universities that closed their campuses. I'm not 100% sure, but for us, it kind of makes sense because we're such an enclosed, like shut off campus from the rest of like the city. Whereas, you know, you go to Stanford, that's like smack dab in the middle of Palo Alto.
Yeah. And also a big factor for us is that Stanford Hospital was one of two hospitals in the state of California where that was accepting COVID patients. It was Stanford and UCSF at the time. And so not only is it smack dab in the middle of Palo Alto, middle of Silicon Valley, right, you know, not very far from San Francisco, but also it sort of become a hub for COVID just because anyone in the state who was catching COVID likely was ending up at our hospital on our campus. So that was a big consideration when determining when to kick students off campus, how many to allow back, when to allow them back, et cetera.
Yeah. I had the option to go back for like one of my last classes, but it was not a required class for my graduation. Was there any return to campus before the summer semester?
No. So they kicked us all out like first week of March. We were one of the first schools to do it. And then within 3 days of Stanford kicking students off, pretty much every peer institution did the same. We still haven't been invited back. Every person hasn't been invited back, only certain groups. No one. So what happened in spring was in March when they kicked everyone off was they said that you can apply to stay for those with special circumstances. So those who are homeless, housing insecure, students on international students who are on student visas that don't allow them to leave the country, etc. So they allowed about 400 students to stay. And for perspective, we have an undergraduate population of 6,000 students. And those 400 who were allowed to stay, most of whom have still not left. And so that come January, they'll have been on campus for 12 straight months because they've got nowhere else to go. And when you're allowed on campus, you have to sign into this campus contract that basically prohibits you from leaving campus. So that was in the spring. Those same students stayed on in the summer. They didn't allow anyone new in the summer. And then in the fall, they opened up that special circumstances spot to incoming freshmen. So right now on campus, we've got about 600 students, including 100 of us who are RAs or residential assistants, sort of like student staff in the dorm. I mean, we are all in one dorm. It's a 10-story high rise. It was originally graduate student housing, but in order to accommodate 600 students, they had to provide everyone with their private bathroom and private living space, so there was no shared common spaces. So they've got us in graduate student apartments for the time being. And so those are the only students who have been invited back to campus in any capacity, were those with special circumstances. And the decision to kick students off campus in the spring was quite abrupt, actually. It was like a 1 week, it was a Monday or Tuesday, they had said they were going to cancel finals and they were encouraging students to stay in their rooms. And then by the weekend, they were telling everyone that you had 4 days to leave. And they told us that timing of when we could return would be uncertain. So they recommended not packing your whole room, just taking your necessities and leaving campus as soon as possible. We all know how that went. Most of those students are still yet to return to campus, which means the school ended up having to hire movers to go into everyone's room, pack their rooms for them, and then ship their items back home.
I saw something interesting regarding that not too long ago by actually a student who does an undergraduate student that goes to Stanford. I don't remember where I saw it, but it was video footage of them unsealing and unpacking the belongings from their room. And it looked like it was very hastily and very, I would be pressured to not say that it was packed with neglect. And there were like items that were extremely fragile that were like packed in with, no packing stuff. And I understand it's a very tricky situation, Stanford, of course, what, 6,000 you said?
Yes.
And you say you're at 600. Yeah. So like what, 5,500, students' belongings had to be packed up. I don't know what is the 6,000 figure just like the figure of housing, or is that total enrolled?
99% of all students live on campus all 4 years. So the two numbers are essentially the same.
So yeah, it's pretty much the same for Cal Maritime. A great majority of students live on campus. But for us, for example, it's 1,000 people total.
Right.
But yeah, it seems like the situation, and I'm not here to pass blame or light fires under people's asses, but it seemed like there was a general lack of care for students as far as getting their personal belongings back to them.
Yeah, I mean, as a student advocate, I have no issue with calling out administration in areas where they could have done better. And that situation was definitely an example of that. There were students who received their items that were broken, that were definitely packed with neglect. Students that they are still receiving their items to this day, or still have not yet, 6-7 months later. And so it was quite honestly a chaotic mess in terms of them telling us we were going to come back. A good example is in March when they were deciding to kick us off campus. We had a big event planned in May. It was our junior class formal, and we got a letter from the administration saying that they were going to cancel our formal. And we were really upset. We were saying, this is so premature. This is 2 months out. We still are unsure whether or not we're going to be on campus then. Like, we could be back on campus. Things might be fine by then. Of course, I look back at that in hindsight and laugh at how ignorant we were. But I think it goes to show with the biggest issue was the lack of transparency. There was no transparency in what decisions were being made. Like, we didn't know what conversations were happening. Two, who was making those decisions? Three, what the timeline of those decisions were. And four, there seemed to be little to no student input in that decision-making process. All of a sudden they came to us and said, go home. And we were like, whoa, we didn't even know that was on the table. We would have been planning for that. We didn't know how long that took, who you consulted, if students were involved in that process, who made the decision, et cetera. And to this day, that is the main issue, is a lack of transparency in this decision-making process, especially for students who are so, they have so much anxiety around COVID and how it's impacting their lives.
I think it's an interesting, I've got 2 points to make here. First off, I think when we got kicked off of campus, and this has been a long time ago, and I don't have any evidence to support this, but I remember they were like, get ready in case you have to, like, we have to like ship you off. But I don't remember there being like real urgency in that. And then like, all of a sudden it feels like it was like a Saturday night. They sent out an email. They're like, okay, everyone, like, be moved out by Monday. And it was the same thing, just pack your necessities. Mm-hmm. But when we went, I went back and I picked up all of, I had to check out of my room because I was a graduating senior. And so they let us back onto campus. It was like in like chunks and blocks and like let us clean out our rooms because we at Cal Maritime, there are 1, 2, 3, 4 dormitories currently. And so they would stagger students at the same dormitory, but they had like a high capacity of students on campus just staggered across the different dormitories. And the second point that I'd like to make, which I think is a very interesting observation, both talking to you and also from talking to students and student advocates for campuses across the state of California, going from, you know, UCLA to UC Santa Barbara, you know, Stanford, and also from my own personal experiences, universities seem to have like feels like a systemic lack of transparency when it comes to dealing with students. And I don't know if that's something that's stemmed somewhere in history as far as not trusting students, or if there's something else, just like a mindset or like a culture of campuses that breeds this idea that, you know, faculty and staff cannot be transparent with students.
Yeah. I think one issue that, I think can be a cause, because I totally agree. I think a cause of that, as you say, this like systemic issue, is that universities are essentially massive bureaucracies, and they work as their own essential like government systems, with layers and layers of very decentralized but bureaucratic systems that often take years to really understand. And a lot of times, the administration does not trust students to understand the complexity of those systems. Students come in with a list of demands, unwilling to compromise, but ignorant to the bureaucratic systems that really govern day-to-day life at a university. This year, I sit on Stanford's Board of Trustees. It's a 30-person group that is the highest level of decision-making on campus. And that's really where I'm starting to understand like how ingrained this bureaucracy is. And when I say decentralized, I really mean it in that each individual department, like student affairs or residential life or academic departments, has its own bureaucratic system within itself that is then governed by a larger university bureaucratic system. So very layered, siloed, decentralized systems that are all, at the end of the day, affecting residential life and student life. I think that there is not enough trust, I agree, on students to really understand those. But the solution of that is to ingrain students into those systems, is to have student representatives at every layer of those bureaucratic systems inputting like their opinions on not just how the system is governed and how it works, but also how it's affecting like their peers.
I think to be fair, though, and this is just, I think, a change of perspective between the two of us, is that you have, or I feel like just in general, and for my listeners, I've known David for a very long time. You have been always very deeply ingrained in like the systems that be regarding the relationship between, you know, I don't know if you want to consider in a vague sense, like a body, like a corporation, and individuals, where I've always kind of always been on the outside looking in.
Sure.
And so the people that I talk to who have issues, let's say like returning to the issue with, you know, student advocacy and students butting heads with universities, is that the general consensus of students is just, oh, fuck this place. They never give it like a reason. And then when you say like, oh, like, why do you dislike it? Like, what can we do to make it better? The answer is always, well, I just don't like it here. There's a disconnect from the dissenting opinion and the established system.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that also, I mean, a big reason why I decided to attend Stanford was it's notoriously effective with working with its elected student leaders. I really cared a lot about that when choosing colleges, is what schools actually take the time not only to listen to students, but to really hear them, if that makes sense. And not only just to have meetings with them, but to really like work together to bring about change. And Stanford is notoriously good about that. And so like as a class president here, every day I have students who reach out to me asking for like my help in some advocacy issue. Every day it's something of, could this be done differently? Or this could be done better by doing X, Y, and Z. I think the fact that students are so willing to reach out to their elected student government advocates as a way to bring about change shows that there is hope on this campus, that students do believe that the administration is willing to listen to students and that they are willing to bring about change that is recommended by students. And that hope is caused by the good faith on the university system. It's caused by like really showing the examples of, look, here's a case where a student had an issue with something. They went to their elected official. The elected official brought it to the administration. The administration worked with that elected official, brought about the change. Everyone was happy. The campus was made a better, more inclusive space, et cetera. And so I think that is really like a really important part of it is on the university's part is really like keeping that open mind and being willing to work with students. And then also like really showcasing those moments of victory. A lot of these decisions, none of these decisions should be happening behind closed doors. And none of these conversations should be happening behind closed doors, which means the results should always be publicized as well. I think that's really important too. Stanford does a really good job of showcasing examples where it worked with student leaders. And because of that, students are more willing to work with administration. I find that to be a really big key to success as well.
Absolutely. Well, unfortunately, we're going to have to cut this episode off here for various time reasons, but the Take the L podcast is going to be making a return next week. I promise the 3-month hiatus is a one-time thing. We'll be back next week. Maybe we'll have David on again, talk about other stuff, something that's a little bit more cheery than student advocacy groups. But it's always a pleasure talking to you, David. Everyone at home, thank you very much for listening. Once again, sorry that this one is a little bit short. But tune in next week when I wrestle a dinosaur.
Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely.